Hi, I'm Jeremy Schwartz, host of American Criminal. In our latest season, the child of Italian immigrants sets out to achieve the American dream. And if he has to spill some blood along the way, so be it. Listen to American Criminal, Al Capone, wherever you get your podcasts. Or to get ad-free access to the entire season first, subscribe at IntoHistory.com.
Welcome to the OC, bitches.
Oh, with some enthusiasm.
Can you just be here every time and do it?
Yeah, I'm fine with that. I'll drop out of college, come and be a little extra on the podcast.
So, everybody, we have a special day today. I am sitting here with my daughter, Catherine Grace Murich.
CG.
Otherwise known as CG. You all hear me talk about her quite a bit. And, of course, this show started in 2003. She was three. And it ended in 2007. She was seven. And we thought it would be fun for you guys to maybe hear what she thinks about the OC and what it was like when she was young, if she has any memories at all. And first of all, it's been a long time since you've seen Rachel, too.
Huh? Yeah. Well, I saw Rachel back in February when you guys did the photo shoot.
Yes.
I didn't even, like, touch you or hug you because of COVID and everything. We, like, passed in the hallway. We're like, hi.
I know. I wanted to give you the biggest hug. I mean, seriously, you guys, CG was the cutest little girl I've ever seen. Well, I have a little girl.
Well, no, Briar.
Ever. Yeah. Briar's pretty good, too. But, I mean, I'm telling you, this little thing over here was on set all the time with your scooter, like, just hanging
memories I have. Like, Adam Brody on the OC poster you probably saw in the first few episodes that were behind my mom. Like, where everyone signed it, Adam Brody wrote, CG, I want my scooter. And he would just always steal my little pink princess scooter and ride it down the hallways and stuff. That's, like, my one memory from being on set.
Really?
Oh. That's funny that you remember the scooter, too.
Yeah, he likes to steal little girl scooters. It's really weird.
I don't know if that's the best thing to
No, I know. I'm just kidding. He was just prepping for his own daughter. That is so cute. Yeah, it was so nice having you around and just watching Melinda, you as a mom on set taught me a thing or two. But yeah, just the cutest kid ever. We were so happy you were there.
There were some things I asked CG last night. We were talking before we recorded this morning. I was asking her what she remembered. And of course, that was her first memory was the scooter. But do you remember that you got to actually call action and cut on a scene? And I remember the scene. It was Ian Toynton was directing. And it's a scene where Julie is hanging out with Luke in Julie's house. And I have to run over to the Cohen's house. And this little girl, and I have a picture of her on set that Cindy gave me in a director's chair. Oh. And she said, and action. And then she got to say, and cut. And it was on a scene where Julie was having an affair with Luke. What do you think about that one?
Why would you make
appropriate
me yell action and cut on that scene? I mean, I don't remember doing it. I just know the stories about it and Josh talking about it and stuff. But why would you make me when you were
like, why would you have
that
her present?
Was the scene that you had me do that on?
That's
you're
funny.
Like, now you're traumatized.
Yeah.
Was it so weird for you, though, seeing your mom? Well, I know you've watched the show now, right? Mm-hmm. Now that you're older. How do you feel about watching your mom make out with many men?
Well, I think she's mentioned this before, but she's actually made out with my number one celebrity crush.
Yes.
Ian Somerhalder, which it's a little hurtful to see. Because I want that to be me. But anyways, it was funny because all my college friends are now watching it for the first time. And they're like, who does she make out with? And I'm like, oh, Chris Carmack, Chris Pratt. And then she made out with the guy who played Tyler on Vampire Diaries and Ian Somerhalder. And
is that one of the reasons you didn't watch The OC when you were a teenager?
Yes. Yes, very much so.
And
Vampire Diaries, too.
Why did you decide to finally watch The OC?
Well, all my friends were talking about, like in high school, they were all talking about Vampire Diaries. So I finally watched it and it's become like one of my favorite shows. But once I saw you, you know, in the first season making out with those two guys, I was like, you know what? Maybe it'll be okay, like watching her on a different show. But I didn't watch it until my senior year of high school. And I really liked it. After, like, eventually I was able to, like, separate, like, mom from Julie Cooper and, like, actually enjoy the show. But, yeah, I guess I had to get over the initial fear of watching you make out with someone younger than you. And then I was like, okay, I can watch, like, her actual show.
Right.
Aw. What was, so your mom's done a ton of shows, right? And characters and everything. What has been your favorite?
Probably The OC.
Really?
I mean, I
thought you were going to go Vampire Diaries.
I loved her character on Vampire Diaries, Kelly Donovan.
She's awful.
Yeah, she's horrible. But in the end, you come back and like from the dead, spoiler alert, if anyone hasn't seen Vampire Diaries, but you come back from the dead and like murder your husband and then you have like blood pouring out of your mouth. It's like chocolate syrup or something. You weren't in it that much though. So probably The OC is Julie Cooper because it's just funny.
Am I like that in real life?
Yeah.
No.
No. Okay, good.
Well, you had your moments. Okay.
You had your moments. Ooh, the truth comes out. Do you have like a favorite episode or scene of your mom's from The OC that you could think of?
Oh, wow. I haven't watched it since senior year of high school, but I think...
What about last night? We watched...
Last night's was funny. We were talking about... Well, you tell what you said about... It was the episode... Or was
that we're
it
talking
17?
About today.
Yeah. And she wants a job as the interior designer for the Newport group for Kirsten. Mm-hmm. And
well, that's... Yeah, that's actually a good little story. It was... Julie is so upset because she's failed at her decorating first shot. And it says that she's sobbing. And I had to figure out a way to cry over hydrangeas and seagrass mats. And I, you know, as an actor, it's like usually the scene can usually give you that emotion. And I wasn't feeling it. So I told CG while we were watching the episode that I remember specifically having to picture the worst possible thing happening to my daughter to get those tears crying for, so that no matter what, talking to Kirsten about this failure, that these tears would be pouring out of my eyes. And CG was like,
the hydrangeas are out of season.
I was laughing. I mean, you really committed in the fact that you're sobbing over that funny stuff.
But what was going
really
on
funny
in my mind was like the worst possible thing that could happen to my little baby. Because God. What we do as actors, right? But there was one thing that I remember at the very end of the show. The fact that Kirsten had a baby girl, and the scenes that show everyone in the future would have been about 5 years or seven or something. And I said to Josh, I'm like, why didn't you cast CG as the Cohen baby? And he went, oh, I didn't even think about it. So then the very last day of shooting, Ian Toyington was directing, and I begged him to let CG be an extra. I don't know why I was being a stage mom, but he was like, Melinda, we don't have time for this. You have to go away. Anyway. Well.
I don't even remember that. No. So I remember being on set one of the last days, and I saw the little ice cream shop that was all caved in where my mom and Willa Holland were. And there was all this fake glass on the ground. It was like plastic, fake glass. And I remember I grabbed a handful of it and I took it home after like the last day of set. And I had it for like months.
Yeah.
I was like, this is my memory of The OC. I just had like this little pile of like fake glass in my room. Aww. For who knows what reason.
Well, probably because it was sugar glass and you were like, sugar?
It was actually,
I didn't try and eat it.
It wasn't the actual stuff. It was kind of like a gelatin squishy stuff that hangs out on set.
Yeah.
So it's safe. But she used to collect things and put them in bags. I called her the bag lady. So she would take little things. And she'd have, any given day, she'd have five or six different bags that I would find over the years, and she would have her little treasures, and that was one of them.
You know what? My daughter does the same thing, except she uses our dog poop bags and collects them when we're on walks.
That's funny. I used to have all these little purses, and what would I have in it? Poppycock?
Oh, yeah, that's that popcorn.
Oh, I love poppycock.
Mom, poppycock. Oh. That's a funny word for a little girl, isn't it?
It sure is. Nevertheless, delicious.
CG, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me and for a couple minutes.
we're gonna get going on episode 17. I did want to say that CG and I watched this episode, and it's a cool episode we've got coming up here. But CG and I were both like frustrated and yelling at the screen because of Oliver.
Of Oliver, I would have punched him too.
I would have done exactly what Ryan did. Like when Oliver's like, just let fate happen. Just let her go.
Oh,
and Ryan, like,
God.
He thinks about it and then he just goes at him. I was like,
get him. And also, like, I'm sorry, but Marissa's so like, come on, dude. Like, you gotta acknowledge that this dude is off. Like, it's so frustrating to me. I was young for many reasons.
Yeah.
And like, she knows everything that's happened to him, yet she's just like, oh, he's changed.
She's like,
he's different.
Oliver. Like, it's like, how naive are you? Because you know Marissa's not naive. Obviously, it's for the plot and, you know, has to be played that way. But as an audience member watching it, you're just like, what the
F? And I thought it was so funny that Luke was the one who has Ryan's back after they've been at it for so long. And he's the one who's like, let me know if you want me to... You know, give that guy, what is it? The Great Gatsby.
What is the Great Gatsby? We can only
imagine. I'd like to know.
Let me know
the
if you want to bring
Gatsby,
down the
gonna,
hammer
like,
or something.
Do a little jazz dance, like, I mean.
A little jazz square and then like kick him in the face or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I want to see.
We were screaming at the camera.
I don't blame you.
Well, my love, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
CG.
We always love to hear. Oh, and also CG's, a lot of her friends are now watching the OC for the first time. So I love that there's a resurgence.
I will get out of here. You have another guest coming.
We do have another guest. Doug Ellen, the creator of Entourage. And he's super entertaining, guys. So when we come back.
I'm excited to meet him.
Yeah.
Also another show that many of my college friends are obsessed with. So,
yes.
Yeah, that's a fun one too, for sure.
And he's a huge fan of the OC. So
that's so cool.
We'll get his take on the early 2000s and why everything was such a cultural phenomenon. Hi, we're back.
Hi. Yes.
How fun was that to see my little
CG?
I
loved having CG. She should come whenever she's in town.
Right.
Well, today, yes, we have another fun guest. Mindy, you obviously know him, so I'll let you talk about it a little bit.
Yes, Doug Ellen is the creator of the super uber successful Entourage, and it started in 2004, and I had the pleasure of being offered a role where I got to play myself. So, and he's a huge fan of the show. So let's invite him in and talk all things OC Entourage. And there's so many crossovers. And I think you guys are just going to love this. We're also talking about episode 17, The Rivals. And everyone, let's welcome Doug Ellen. Welcome to the OC, bitch.
Thank you.
Hi. Welcome to the OC, bitch. Hi. It's so nice to see you. And I don't know that I've actually...
I don't think we've ever met. I don't think so.
I haven't had the pleasure of meeting you, Doug. So nice to meet you.
You too as well.
Everyone, I have an intro that I like to give our guests every episode. Doug Ellen is our guest today. He's an Emmy-winning writer and producer and sometimes actor. He created a little show called Entourage. He has been a fan and supporter of the OC since the beginning, and quite a few of the OC cast can thank him for roles on Entourage. Presently, he's the host of not one but two podcasts. Victory, the podcast
Two.
With
We're
Kevin
go for
Dillon.
Six.
Yeah. and Kevin Connolly, and Hollywood Ways, an unfiltered podcast about his 30 years in Hollywood, delivered in the unique style that is Doug Ellen. Let's just say this man has a way with words. Welcome, Doug.
Thank you, guys. What's happening? I don't know. It's surreal, weird stuff. You know, this show.
25 years ago, Carrie Bradshaw started posing a slew of honest, provocative, relatable questions to the modern woman in her fictional column, Sex and the City. And just like her, the singles and hopeless romantics of New York still want to know, can you change a man? What constitutes cheating? And can you be friends with your ex? I'm Tara Llewellyn. You may know me from Gilmore to Say, a Gilmore Girls podcast. And after 10 years of navigating dating, friendships, career shifts, heartbreak, and of course, love in New York as Carrie did, I couldn't help but wonder, how relevant is Carrie's column 25 years later? Join me as I revisit this beloved series with some of my favorite New Yorkers and closest friends as we commiserate on first dates, one-night stands, love lost, friendship breakups, and everything in between, to bring Carrie's column to life and answer her questions from each episode of Sex and the City through a modern lens in my new weekly podcast, And Just Like Her.
You know, had so many crossovers with Entourage. And, you know, when we were doing Entourage, all the girls in the office were like, you got to watch The OC, which, look, I'm not a teen drama guy. I've never watched any of those shows. And I turned this one on and watched the entire, like, first season in a week. And then I did the same thing with my daughter now, 20 years later or whatever amount of years later now. So my 17-year-old daughter, who's obsessed with Gossip Girl, I said, have you ever seen The OC? And she said she never heard of it. So we watched it the last couple of weeks, and it's wild to see it through her eyes when she doesn't know any of these actors really, and any of the characters. So it was really great.
Well, and what do you think you... When I got to do your podcast a few months back, and you were saying that you watched it and it became addicting to you, and you actually watched the whole first season in one weekend right before I got to see you again. What do you think it was so attractive, even as an adult, and also as someone in the industry? What was new about it? Was it the writing, the comedy, the cast?
I mean, you guys, for real, obviously, you two and Adam and Peter were like the comedy gold of the show. But I think that Josh, you know, and I just said this, I posted something on Instagram, but I think Josh is like the more sophisticated, focused writer that I am. But there are similarities to it. We're both, you know, Jewish guys who wrote these stories that were about these outsiders coming into these strange worlds. And, you know, the idea, you know, even in the episode that we're talking about tonight, when he's writing, you know, Gentiles are not funny, I'm like, only I would write something like that on Entourage, where most people are going, what the fuck are they talking? I don't know if I can curse
you,
on it.
Yes,
but
you can.
What are they talking about? But I think what got me from the show from the get-go, and I've been a Peter Gallagher fan since like Idolmaker, you know, I love the guy. But what got me into the show in the first place was the comedy of it and the idea of that fish out of water element. And, you know, to be honest with you, Entourage was so influenced by Good Will Hunting and the tone of that kind of show. And then when I saw this, and honestly, it's one of those shows that I was like, why didn't I come up with that? You know, like that's, and we actually did something on Entourage that was kind of a nod to it, which was the Long Island version of The OC, which was called Five Towns, which was going to be a fake show that Eddie Burns and Johnny Drama were doing. So, you know, and it was just, it's one of those shows that you're watching and you just get such a kick out of it. And again, we had several actors, including obviously you, Melinda, on Entourage. But, you know, the first time he said, welcome to the OC, bitches, it was one of those things that connected with me in a similar fashion to where I kept making Kevin Dillon say victory on Entourage. And he used to be like, why do I keep saying this? I'm like, it's going to be your thing. And, you know, to think 15 years later, we're both kind of revisiting it. It's pretty surreal. So
that's cool. Yeah. You did have a few crossovers. Like you said, you had people from the OC on Entourage. I was not one of those people, Doug. What happened?
I would have loved to have you. I don't think you called us back, to be honest with you, Rachel, because we would have loved to have you. And I'm serious.
Story.
That's totally true, though. But it really was. It was the obsession of the younger people in our office. And then Gossip Girl, obviously. So Josh is just, he's got a style of writing. And I think that when he cast you guys, which I do, you know, your comedy is so good in these kind of strange stories that you're like, what the hell is happening here? And how much stuff can happen? And again, I'm not a soap guy, so I know that's kind of, you know, normal for soaps. But the fact that you guys are playing it so real with such great dialogue, I think is what elevates it to me and lets you just go and go, oh, this is so crazy. Like Ryan would be in jail for probably 25 years. I grew up with a lot of kids like Ryan, and you know, they'd be in jail for 25 years for the amount of crimes he commits during the first season of the show, you know. But and Peter Gallagher is also, you know, he's kind of similar to my father in a lot of ways, except my father didn't have any of that understanding, where Peter just keeps going, you know what, I'm going to stick with you and I'm going to keep going. So it's got some wish fulfillment elements, and it's just, you know, it's just a really well-crafted show. So,
and similarly, Josh putting his voice, especially in this episode, like you said, you can hear, I can hear Josh and his, the fact that he's probably a Daily Show guy and not a Leno guy.
Oh yeah.
You did the same thing. It was a lot of the humor, your thought process on and commenting on Hollywood.
100%. And it was funny, just even that line, and not Jay Leno was on Entourage, but I am a more of a Letterman Daily Show guy than Leno, even though whatever, we all respect everybody, but a lot of that stuff. And Josh, you know, whether he went to Camp Tuckahoe or not, that's stuff that I did on Entourage all the time. I was putting elements of my life and at Tulane or here or there. So yeah, everything, you know, that kind of was in Entourage, I used, you know, from my life and put those elements in. So
yeah, Josh definitely did that a lot. He was always eavesdropping, always playing detective too.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of that meta humor, that inside commenting on people commenting on the show, commenting back. But what does it feel like? I mean, Josh has said that he really was just doing things that he liked, things that appealed to him. But ultimately, he created pop culture instead of just reflecting it. And I feel like Entourage did that as well, although it's a reflection of exactly what Hollywood is, the most realistic thing that I experienced. And of course, you're on that side, that production side, that actors don't always get to experience. And it's, how does it feel to actually have created pop culture, because you guys did the same thing?
I mean, obviously, you know, you never know what you're going to do and what's going to land and what isn't. Like you said, with Josh, it was really important to me to be as grounded and realistic as possible. And oftentimes I would talk about things that people would say, I don't know that anyone's going to get this outside of Hollywood. And I would say, well, they'll either figure, there was no Google, I don't think, but they'll figure it out in some way, and or they won't. So, you know, I think even the stuff that really, you know, I think what I feel, even when I was watching this episode, and I have no idea how Josh's process is, but when he's talking about big comedy, which it's so me, I hate prop comedy, and I like very subtle stuff. And again, I'm not talking about my work. It may not be, but what I go for and what attracts me is that kind of more intellectual humor. And, you know, it's not that you guys are winking and nodding at this thing, but you are such good actors, like I said, playing in this, what usually would be this kind of real teen drama with really kind of bizarre stories that don't fit. And, you know, the amazing thing is how much stuff, you know, Entourage, I was always very, it was very important to me to do the smallest details. Like, I don't want anything major to happen. I wanted it to be a day in the life. Whereas on the OC, the biggest things happen every week. People are assaulting people. People are cheating on their wives. Melinda, you're sleeping with, you know, high school students, which, you know, yeah. That also fascinates me, because, you know, obviously Entourage has taken a lot of backlash about, you know, what our legacy is in the Me Too era and this and that, which, you know, of course, it's upsetting to someone when you've worked that hard on something and you really feel, in my mind, Entourage was tame compared to the reality of a Mark Wahlberg, who it was, you know, inspired by. But when watching the OC now, I'm like, Jesus, this is more sexual than Entourage was, to be honest with you. Even though we're on cable, there's so much stuff going on. So I don't know if you guys have ever had any of that come back, or I think because of some of our language, it feels like we're so much more edgy. But the truth is, this was an edgy look at high school, you know. And you know, even my daughter, when she was watching it, she's like, we don't have parties like that. I'm like, thank God you don't, you know. But
or she's covering herself.
Yeah, exactly. She's lying to me.
Well, and you and I had that discussion after the podcast, that what was going on then was how different it is now. And if there were to be a reboot of Entourage, say, I think it would be fascinating to see how Ari and the boys have to navigate Me Too, post-Weinstein, post-pandemic. Hollywood has changed for the better, I hope.
Yeah.
But I feel like the representation that Entourage was, it's very real. It's a cutthroat business. People do talk like that. It's I love the Sandy line that it's like hungry, hungry hippos. And I think when Entourage came on, it very much was an inside show for people in Los Angeles or New York, say, or people in the entertainment industry, whereas people in the Midwest were like, huh? Just because I had in-laws in the Midwest who they didn't quite get it, but they caught up now. And now everybody kind of, you put the industry on the map, and I'm sure that the real stories are even more extraordinary and maybe harsher in real life.
It's not even close. I obviously, you know, for me, who's somewhat conservative, I try to keep it realistic, but toned down, where the guys, to me, the show was about friendship more than it was about Hollywood, which is, you know, again, similar to the OC. You have these two guy friends at the core of this, which have similarities to Vince and Eric between Ryan and, you know, him. But, you know, you can't look back, you know, Entourage was like Obama's favorite show, which he would never say if he was president today, but he used to say it. We were supposed to go to the White House and watch it with him.
Oh, wow.
So now you look back, and again, like I say, I don't see any issue with rebooting any of these shows, because I was writing very realistically to what the time was, and I would do the same now. And that's what I do in whatever I'm writing now. But, you know, look, I do look at the OC and I look at Entourage, and there are certain things that I just wouldn't write today and my friends wouldn't say today. But the way that, you know, they teased Luke when his father came out and stuff, that's what would have happened in my high school. And, you know, of course you look back and go, what kind of fucking animals were we? But it really was, and probably still is in a lot of places, how kids are. But I think, you know, if you are an evolved human, you do grow and you do learn that. And again, it's not to say that those characters can't exist, because they'll always exist. There's always going to be racists and homophobes and all of that stuff. So when you're doing art, whatever level you want to call Entourage art and OC, I'll give you higher marks. But, you know, you want to reflect real characters that people can relate to and say, I've seen that. And like, even by the way, Melinda, I mean, we had the woman in my high school that was beautiful like you, that slept with a kid in my high school. It was a very real situation, you know? Wow. And at the time, in Merrick, Long Island in 1984, it was like, what the hell is going on? He was a hero, though. It was like, you know, everybody was like, you are God, man. And now she'd probably be in jail. I don't know, you know?
Right. Yeah. It's really interesting, all of the things. You know, even in this episode, there were a few things I saw that I thought, could we get away with that now? Like, even, you know, Brett Harrison, who plays the big funny guy in this episode, is like mocking things that I don't think you could do now. You know, like there's such a hard line with comedy and in every area, you know, it's obviously a more sensitive environment.
I think you'd probably just adjust it and give him some other thing. Because again, there's no intention in what's happening there to offend. But when you look at it through the lens of today, you go, okay. And believe me, Josh could come up with 5,000 different ways to make that kid funny, who was very funny, by the way. That kid was very good. But I mean, and so was Oliver. But I think, you know, it's then, you know, I mean, I know what happened with us, and Melinda, we might have spoken about this, and I don't even like to say the word, but the word retarded. Mm-hmm. I grew up, and that's what we called people. That just was the thing that everybody said when I was a kid. And after season two or season three of Entourage, I think it was the chairman of Fox called me up and said, you know, Entourage is like my favorite show I watch every week, but he had an autistic son. And he was like, you know, this is, it offends me. Right. It's something that would have never entered my brain in a million years, but I never wrote the word on the show again. Mm-hmm. And again, that's not to say if I was writing something like Goodfellas, which I'm not suggesting I could, but if I was doing something like that, you write characters that do have this anger towards other people and this and that. So I don't want to say it needs to be eliminated, but when you're doing something like the OC or entourage, which you want to be inclusive and you want to be this, and you're not trying to create that kind of, I'm sure he would adjust it now. And I'm sure he will on the new Gossip Girl, you know?
Well, and it goes without saying that it was a time, and it's too simple to just say, well, that's the way the world was. But we can reflect back and say, this is how we would deal with it now. And I remember that R word being that there was a campaign in the 2000s to let people know that this is just not okay anymore. And that's just how society grows and evolves. Like you said, becoming an evolved, aware human being. We're much more aware and tolerant and inclusive. I mean, OC wasn't very diverse. Of course, Newport Beach.
But the OC...
It's like that.
But that's the point. Yeah, Newport Beach is not diverse. Hollywood agencies were not diverse, which is what I used to talk about. I'm like, go walk around CAA and look at what it looks like. I'm just writing what I see. I'm not trying to change anything. And, you know, I've talked about this before. You know, the first thing I did after Entourage was called The Brick, which was the entire cast was African-American. John Ridley wrote it. It was my idea with Mike Tyson. I've always been about inclusivity, but also about reality. And you have to have a place that you can both do both. But, you know, listen, where I grew up, you know, and it's Josh probably has a similar thing. But, you know, I said something on a podcast the other day, which is always I was a Woody Allen, Albert Brooks guy and the neurotic Jew, which Adam Brody is playing. Mm-hmm. And someone said to me, you know, like, because I always say, oh, I'm a pretty good Jewish athlete. And someone said, like, why don't you stop with the stereotypes of the Jews aren't athletes, which, by the way, a first Orthodox Jew just got drafted into Major League Baseball. But I grew up in stereotypes. It just was what my town was. There were the Jews, the Italians, the Irish, and the Italians said things about the Jews and the Jews said things about the Irish. And we all kind of thought it was funny. But when you look at the world now, you realize there are so many other people that are being kept down by these stereotypes, and that you don't need to do them. And if you are a good writer and you do have something to say, you can evolve with the world and understand that's not what needs to be, you know, out there. And again, I'm not suggesting that anyone should be censored. Create what you want and the world will be and judge what it is. But
on Valentine's Day, 1929, a group of gangsters was massacred in a cold Chicago garage. The crime shook the country. And even though investigators had only just started looking for answers, everyone was sure they already knew who was behind the crime. Al Capone. Hi, I'm Jeremy Schwartz, host of the new true crime history podcast, American Criminal. We take you inside the minds of some of our most notorious felons and outlaws, exploring the dark side to the American dream. In our latest season, a child of Italian immigrants sets out to make good on the promises of that dream. But Al Capone's path to success doesn't take him down the straight and narrow. Instead, he transforms himself from a smarter-than-your-average thug into the most infamous criminal America has ever known. Listen to American Criminal Al Capone wherever you get your podcasts. Or to get early ad-free access to the entire season first, plus hundreds of other ad-free history podcast episodes, subscribe at IntoHistory.com.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
I've evolved to a point where I just wouldn't sit around saying the things that I did when I was 15 years old, which a lot of Entourage was written from that perspective. It was my high school friends and how we grew up. And, you know, so we all grow.
By the way, hopefully. If you are self-described neurotic Jewish man, that is Rachel's type. Her favorite, her nice crush. Tell him who your crush is.
Oh, right. I was like, wait, where are you going with this? I was like, look, thinking of all my ex-boyfriends and going through my head. My ultimate celebrity crush is Larry David, and it will never change. And he is my ultimate.
Yeah, he's mine too, weirdly enough. You know, yes. Larry's who I actually saw
he's
him a
universal
couple of days ago
did you?
At a restaurant, and Larry was great enough to do Entourage. And, you know, was Entourage all started because I wrote a Curb Your Enthusiasm spec script and gave it to my manager, who was also Wahlberg's manager, who was my manager for 10 years. But somehow that reminded him that I could actually write. And he said, you know, we have this show idea. Larry is a genius, and you know, he's a curmudgeon-y guy, which sadly a lot of people say I'm a young Larry David, which I would like to be as good a writer as him, but you know, I don't know about the rest of it. So.
That's awesome.
You cast the first OC member was Samira Armstrong, and she was Ari's assistant. And I got to play myself. Alan Dale was on the show. Autumn Reeser was on the show. Was there anyone else from the show?
Amanda Righetti.
Oh, Amanda. Right.
Yep.
But I'm getting more and more offended here, Doug.
Rachel, I swear we would have had you in a second. I think you were on fire. You were on fire at the time, you know? And I just remember, you know, what kept happening. Sheila just kept going, the OC, basically you got to get everyone. And I was like, well, are we doing like the OC or because we were like taking everybody after they were on the OC, but everybody was so good that it was great, but I would have loved to have you. So
Entourage went a little,
you'll sign on for the reboot.
Yeah. From LA to Orange County. You just went a little south there to get everyone on, which is awesome.
You guys offered me the role. Did everyone else have to audition?
You know what? I don't remember. I know I wanted you to play that role. I thought you were hilarious. I still do when I watch it. You know, every moment you kind of, and both of you guys, you have a real kind of way of keeping it grounded while playing it tongue in cheek. And you're, you know, it's a very difficult thing, as, you know, Jeremy did on our show, to be a likable asshole is a very tricky thing to do.
Sure.
And not that your character was as much of an asshole, Rachel, although you were.
Oh, I was.
You
know? I was an asshole
in the beginning.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. So, but Melinda, it's just relentless and could easily have been a one-note thing that you make a very realistic portrayal of. And, you know, it's great.
You know, it's funny. So in this particular episode, and you're talking about, you know, our characters were assholes in the beginning and stuff. And this was the first episode. And I remember for my character, there's a particular scene in this episode where I'm at the lockers with Seth. And I don't know if you watched this recently, Doug, or if
I did. I did my research. Okay. I don't mess around.
But I remember like Josh actually gave Summer a scene where she showed some vulnerability and some emotion. And I remember Josh saying to me, and I feel weird saying this because like, I don't want to, you know, whatever. I feel weird.
Praise yourself.
Yes.
Do it.
Yeah.
Do
no, it. But he was like, oh, this scene just showed me that you can do that too. Like you can do it all. And that's why he kept writing for me, and maybe why Seth and Summer wound up instead of Anna and Seth. Or they were already on that track.
Yeah, no, I think that's what happens. And I know the scene you're talking about. And, you know, at the beginning of the show, you are definitely this, you know, bubbly, wild girl. And it's similar to Ari on Entourage. Ari, the first line I wrote from Entourage was that he was cheating on his wife, which I didn't know where the show was going. And he never cheated on his wife. And that was complete bullshit. But I did not write it as bullshit when it started. But as it evolved, and I saw, obviously, I knew Jeremy could do more. But I think it was the same with you. In that scene, you really feel for you. All of this bluster that you've been putting on the whole time really comes to pass that, yeah, I really like this guy, and all those bullshit insecurities that I've been, you know, trying to bury are all there. And I think that's what makes the show so good and makes you, again, and I really do love the show, but some of the storylines that are happening in this are so insane, but you really are feeling for these people and you really are caring for them because the writing is so good and the acting is so good. And so.
Well, thanks. Yeah, I mean, the whole storyline, particularly in this episode with Oliver, I feel like everyone can relate to how much you want to do what Ryan did. And we talked about this a little bit with Melinda's daughter, CG, that everyone's watching and you want to punch him in the face. And when Ryan does, you're fully supportive of that. It's like the storylines you're talking about. Like, I think everyone probably had someone in high school that was, I don't know, to that extreme, because Oliver, let's be honest, is really extreme. But I think it's relatable to a certain degree. But, you know, actually, we didn't even read the synopsis. I'm just going to do the synopsis real quick of this episode so people kind of know what's happening and what's going on. Ryan, it's called The Rivals, and Ryan continues to become suspicious of Oliver when he suddenly transfers to Harbor High. Ryan attempts to try to expose Oliver of the person that he is, gets met with negative approval from everyone, especially Seth. Summer shows off her new boyfriend, Danny, who's the over-the-top, whose over-the-top antics have everyone constantly laughing except for Seth. Meanwhile, Sandy is all in on taking over the Lighthouse restaurant, but Jimmy still needs some convincing. Whew, okay, a lot going on in this episode.
There is a lot going on. And you know, you say you want to punch Oliver in the face, which I agree with, but it's like everybody is torturing this poor Ryan guy. I mean, he's like, it's so clear that this is a bad guy. And I think, which is interesting, because I don't remember if I felt this way 18 years ago. Did people hate Marissa? I mean, she's actually the worst girlfriend in the history of the universe. I mean, she is just stuffing this guy in Ryan's face.
I feel you. I'm with you on that. I'm watching this and I'm thinking, Marissa, like, hello, how can you be so... naive, and I did, you know, say this before too. I'm just like, I wanted to almost hit her too. Cause, like, first of all, Oliver comes to the school. He has the same exact schedule as Marissa. And Marissa's like, oh my God, I'll show you around. La-di-da. And you're just like, hello, wake the fuck up.
I can't say in 2021 that I would hit her. I wouldn't hit her back then either.
Yes,
but you can hit her. I think a girl can hit her. I can't hit her. So I'm not gonna hit Marissa, but yeah, I think so. But Marissa, I mean, she's just like, even if he was a great guy, who sticks another guy in your boyfriend's face, especially this rich guy, into this poor, broken guy? And she's just like, he's going to come here. You want to take cooking class with him? You want to do this? I mean, he puts up with a lot, you know?
Yes.
Now, we really do know that Oliver is probably, in television history, one of the most disliked, or I should say hated, characters. But there was something that Josh was saying that was interesting about it, because there was such a strong reaction, and we did have an adult audience, and it seemed to be that it was the adults having the similar conversation like the three of us are having, how frustrating it is, how we can see this manipulation of this narcissistic ego, psychotic ego guy, and Marissa being so silly and yelling at the screen. Whereas apparently some of the teenagers weren't enthralled with the story, and less so
the story or with him.
Well, this was something that Josh had said, that the teenagers were a little more like on the edge of their seat. What's going to happen? Mm. Where the adults were like, "Are you kidding? Come on!"
So, right.
Well, that makes sense.
Well, I think it's interesting. And Oliver, look, he's a character that feels like he'll be in Gossip Girl, you know, and. The kid is great,
yes.
And he sells every moment of it. And he's just, you know, pushing buttons, and everybody's just jumping in because they got their own selfish needs. I find it, you know, look, I find it hilarious that Seth is like, just befriend the guy. And even the following episode, which I know we're on this one, but they're like, mm-hmm. Oh, why don't you go to Palm Springs with the guy who just tried to kill himself,
right.
Who, you know, got arrested for cocaine. And Sandy is always like, you know, which is why Peter is so good. The fact that he's able to even play these scenes where he's going to go into a business with Jimmy,
right.
the biggest criminal in the neighborhood, open up a restaurant in Newport, which I'm guessing is not going to be like the most popular place in town for, you know, if you're Bernie Madoff, I don't know that you open a restaurant in your local neighborhood, but they all sell it in a way that you're on board, you know?
Well, yeah. I had to say, I was like, what's going on with Sandy doing this Lighthouse? Like, what happened to the... But yes, I mean,
he was only trying to kiss his wife like a week before, right. And also, you know, forgetting Oliver, but Jimmy's the biggest sociopath on the show. He moved next door to the woman he's in love with, and now, you know, he's somehow suckered $100,000 out of these people. Now he's got him to buy him a restaurant to give him a life again, you know, when a week before he was going to be a paralegal. So
right.
I think Sandy is one of the greatest, most understanding humans ever come in. But I wonder if he's going to get his at some point, you know?
Oh, yeah. He definitely has some things coming up, but it's always so much fun to watch it. But also his parenting style. It was a great scene where, you know, they really come down, drop the hammer on Ryan for, you know, what are you thinking? What are you doing? And he's trying to defend. He's like, but this guy's doing this, and he's got an incident report against him. And he's like, so what? And also this is, and he says, what, you're going to kick me out? And he says, no, because this is how a parent treats a son. And aww, even though he was a, it was, you know, being a disciplinarian, Ryan has a moment where he's like, oh, wow, this is what it feels like to be cared about. And
yeah, no, I think it's really, it's obviously it's extreme in what he's done, because he would be in jail just for probably breaking into school, let alone beating the hell out of the guy in the library. But, you know, when my daughter was watching it, she was like, you should be as understanding as he is. You know? and I think, though, you know, Peter is so great that you just buy into that he's giving this good advice because it's really coming from a good place. Mm-hmm. And you know he's there. And even while they're talking about the other kid who basically has the same problems as Ryan. I mean, right, he's just a little sicker. That, you know, they basically have the same problems. But, you know, he just is, it's a great look for teens and parents to look at. Obviously, there has to be consequences to criminal behavior when your children are doing them. But I think everybody can get while they're watching this that there's deeper things that you're looking at, and the relationships between them are really, really good and really something, you know, again, we all aspire to have our kids really feel they can trust us in the way that these guys kind of trust him. So
yeah,
it's a nice thing.
But it's also like, for me, rewatching the show as an adult, you are watching it a lot differently and you're paying attention to those things like, oh, that's a good parenting tip, or like, oh fuck, I never want my daughter to do that. Like, you know what I mean? So
yeah,
it's taken on this yeah, whole new perspective for me, which has been pretty interesting. But, you know, nevertheless, yeah, I still hate Oliver, always did and always have. So that doesn't change.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's just, oh, God, man. Ben is so good in this episode. Everyone is. I mean, it was a really good episode. And, you know, speaking more to the Sandy of it all, there's that scene in the kitchen with Seth about the funny thing, which I thought was awesome, where, you know, so big funny guy, Brett Harrison, who is a good friend of mine. He's one of Josh's best friends. He was Adam Brody's best friend during the show. They lived together. They were roommates. So I basically lived with Brett as well. Awesome guy. But
is that how he got the role? Did Josh create a role for them? Because they lived together.
I think so. I'm pretty sure. Yeah. Brett was, yes. And there's still a lot. Josh was Brett's best man at his wedding. So yes, all homies. But he came in because of Adam Brody. That's how everyone met Brett. But yeah, big funny guy, you know, and he's at the house, and then Seth and Sandy are in the kitchen, and that was one of my favorite things, just talking about how unfunny.
Yeah, it was great.
Ryan is, Marissa is, and Kirsten. He's just like talking yeah, shit I mean, about those, his wife.
Those inside jokes are funny, and you know, him looking like Russell Crowe and things. I mean, they're just they're it's very kind of irreverent, and you know, and I think, you know, I don't know how overwhelmed Josh was. You know, when I was doing season one of Entourage, I honestly thought I was going to die. And we only did seven, because I did a pilot first. So we only did seven episodes. And I always thought about like doing 30 or whatever you guys did, 22 episodes.
Yeah, 27.
I mean, it's mind boggling. You know, it's yeah, very challenging. And, you know, a lot of people talk to me, why don't you write more? And because it's hard, you know, mm-hmm, and it's when you have to juggle all those people and characters, and especially when you start, which it feels like you guys sort of like we were, you start to become friends with your talent. And then everybody wants more. And that also becomes difficult, right, you know? And it's interesting on this show, like all of a sudden Luke's gone and Marissa's gone, you know, it's
I know.
Pretty wild.
Well, Josh would always say he was writing my shark attack scene to kill me off the show. That was always our inside joke.
It's hard still enough for us to keep it all organized in our heads doing this podcast, let alone doing, you know, writing, shooting, mm-hmm, editing, preparing for something like that. So, but and also the fact that it was his first show at the age of 27.
It's amazing. And obviously he's proven, you know, that he knew what he was doing. And I think, though, my guess is he probably feels a lot more secure doing it now than he did then. But
yeah. One other thing I wanted to say, because we were talking about watching as an adult. This is so stupid, but when Ryan's in detention, so I'm watching it and I'm like, that looks like heaven. Like, you are totally, like, no, you're not disturbed. You're doing whatever you want to do in perfect silence. And I'm like, oh, my God. Like, as a mother, you have those moments of, like, going to the hospital, like, being alone in a bed and not being interrupted. Like, that sounds great.
Quiet.
Sorry. Yeah,
quiet. Quiet time. No, right. I'm such I hear a loser. You're in the, you must be in the thick of it. How old are your kids now?
Well, she's six, but she's great. And six. It's awesome. But, you know,
just, I know, like, she's great. Listen, I get it.
Yes. But those moments of, like, I'm like, detention looks awesome. I just had to say that. I had to share that with her.
Just high school looks awesome. You know, you know, that was also one of the things, you know, this show is like, quickly you take the nerd and all of a sudden he's the cool guy with the hot girlfriend. And, you know, it happens quickly, but it's, there's a lot of wish fulfillment to it. You're like, I'd like to go to this high school, you
totally.
Know, and like you break in. They don't even suspend you. They bring you into the principal's office and talk about what your problems are. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, my high school, if you broke into the school, you go to jail, you know?
Yeah. So beautiful detention room. I mean, it's very glamorous.
There's something else about this episode that I thought was really adorable between Anna and Seth, that they've that they're dressing alike, that they've become like the old couple already. Right. And
or that she's the female him.
That she's the female him.
So, all right. So that also, it's crazy. I mean, again, like, however Josh comes up with it. So my assistant at the time, season one, who became my right-hand writer, she was the one who told me, like, you got to watch The OC. And I wrote the line about Turtle and Jamie Lynn Sigler, which I'm not even sure if I saw this, or maybe I stole it. Who knows? But that's I literally wrote the same line, because Turtle says she's me. It's a little more vulgar, but she says she's me with, you know, with boobs, whatever. So, you know, I literally had boobs. The same. I had the same thing. And that's what, you know, this woman who wrote for Entourage, Ali Musica, I used to say that. I'm like, she thinks like me. It's freaking crazy, because I had such a hard time finding guys that I thought like me. So I related to that as well. And it's interesting, though, that, you know, when you're trying to find drama for, okay, why is he going to end up with Summer when this girl seems like she's got it all? And it's an interesting choice to go, well, we're just so perfect together that we're awful together. You know what I mean? So,
yeah, I loved watching it. I was like, that's right. Crash and burn, motherfuckers. Crash and burn. I'm totally watching it like it's a competition and like I'm watching a sporting event.
Yeah.
It's funny, though, but he really did it in a way that you get it, and you don't really root against her, but you do want Summer to win, you know? So it's not an easy thing to do. You know, when you look at triangle relationships and you're like, how am I going to differentiate these people? That's always a challenging thing. So,
well, and going back to Seth and Danny sitting there doing video games, because up to this point, you know, it's the theme of this show is embrace the friend. And he's been watching all of his friends laugh at Big Funny Guy. And finally he looks over and he says, you know, can you not be so funny around Summer? She thinks you're the funniest guy ever. And that little, and Seth, he's endearing, but he's very self-centered and manipulative, and turns around and says, you know, I don't think you're going big enough. And just that absolute, you know, sense of, oh, that's what's going on. And just the audience goes, oh, he has a chance. And that scene that you talked about at the lockers just pays off, because now he's like, hey, and it's, yes,
absolutely.
So,
but he is so self-centered. I mean, I don't really care. He's like, Ryan, I don't really care that your girlfriend hangs out with this great looking, I don't know whether the audience thought he was great looking, but this great looking rich, you know, guy, I don't care. Like, that doesn't matter to me. Just be nice to him. It doesn't matter that every time you turn around, she's leaving you. She's driving to Palm Springs without you. She's doing, like, I mean, I can't imagine putting up with it. So it's funny, though.
No way.
They've been doing that thing with Ryan and Seth that they're both sitting there next to each other, having this, saying the same thing, but talking about two separate things. It's happened in quite a few episodes where Seth is just completely. But then my daughter and I watched it together, and we were literally like screaming at the episode. It was so frustrating how everybody was you know, calling out Ryan for his behavior. And when the dean finally calls him out, I'm like, oh my gosh, like he really, it's, yes, it was frustrating. I finally,
by the way, though, can we talk about the awful dean? The awful dean is going to tell Marissa that he broke into the school and looked at his confidential file. Yes. I'm like, what kind of adults are these?
I know, like what principal or dean or whatever would do that? You know, that's personal, private information. Yeah. You are just stirring the pot.
Oh, and then yeah. She goes,
by the way, Ryan doesn't have enough problems, you know?
I know.
And then she says, is that my letter? I've been looking everywhere for this. Now I don't trust you. And then he sees her up at the top of the stairs at school, and she looks and she walks away with Oliver. Oh my gosh, it's so frustrating.
I'm also trying to figure out why she's looking everywhere for the letter. She knows Ryan has the combination. Right. So right. Wouldn't that be the first thing you do? Like, you already broke into his files. I mean, did you go into my locker? Did you really go into my locker? But, and then also Ryan, I got to just say this. He's not the best criminal I've ever seen. I mean, he sees the security guard at the school and he's like, ah, fuck it. I'll just go in anyway and rob the place right now.
Right.
And then, you know, he goes to the locker in the middle of the day, and the only person in the entire hallway is Oliver, who's apparently just stalking him all the time. So,
yes, well, convenient writing, shall we say.
it works, and you're on board for every step of it, and you're just like, all right. And you do, like you said, Melinda, you like, I want to take this guy and smash his face into the locker.
You know? Yeah.
And,
at least it's a reaction. Not having a reaction is the worst thing in entertainment, right? Just not having any kind of emotion. But I did want to make a point of every time he does, he's doing the break-in, and it's the song Come Into Our Room by Clinic. Mm-hmm. It's
so
really
good.
Right.
I had to look it up and watch. The video's really bizarre. And it's
I gotta check
the
it
music
out.
Video?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
But the music was very important on our show. Yeah.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's great.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was just so much, like we said, going on between there's so many different things with like Oliver and then the big funny guy and then Seth. Hello, Sandy.
Yeah.
Sandy and Jimmy and Julie and having her emotional breakdown.
Yeah, I was about to say Melinda Melinda trying to take over the freaking interior decorating and, you know.
Right. Well, this is why we said the theme is embracing. Kirsten literally has to embrace Julie. And when we had Kelly Rowan on, we were reminiscing that, you know, we're friends in real life, and Josh started writing for us to be friends and talk about being tolerant of, you know, accepting Julie for the way she is, and she thinks she's going to help. And then Julie's just sobbing about ruining her chance to be a decorator for the hydrangeas and seagrass mats. And then when it works out and Caleb says, you hit it out of the park, and Kirsten, I'm like, I did? And Kirsten says, she did? Oh no, we've just created a monster. And she just takes all the credit. And it's like, you know, it's just my thing. So it's, but it did make for, it was really a great friendship, and it did make for a lot of great storylines when it came to Kiki and Juju. And
yeah, no, for sure. I mean, your character, you bring so much to it. I mean, I love, you know, I still, I've now seen it 3 times in the last three months, but the Riverside line is still, the Riverside line is as good as the Welcome to the OC line. You're like, he said I was from Riverside. You know?
You are from Riverside. So it was his tone.
But it's amazing though, the forgiveness that goes on this show. I mean, you know, you've left Jimmy, you're with like your, you know, the girlfriend's father, you live next door, and everybody's still like getting along and going to the parties. And it all has that aspirational, which he says is not a word, which I think it is a word.
It
isn't
is.
It?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know, but it's always right. A word I use when I'm trying to sell things. And that's, you know, again, what the show is. To me, it is aspirational. It really is. You know, you feel like as dramatic as things are, there's just like this kind of bubble in this world that, you know, feels kind of safe in a weird way. You could do anything, you could commit any crime, and you can still come back from it, you know?
Well, I grew up in Orange County, and I'll tell you, as the scripts went on, it would trigger something, and I would say, whoa, that's an insane storyline, but I know someone that happened to. Mm. In fact, I mean, I had a friend who fell off a cliff and passed, unfortunately. I mean, it's like some pretty very, very, very extreme things actually did happen. But
yeah.
So,
well, yeah, I mean, like I said, the neighborhood I grew up in, I mean, you know, I grew up with, you know, my friend from elementary school's in jail for 5 murders, you know, and he was that Ryan guy. He was the handsome guy. I actually saw him at my 25-year reunion. And I was like, you're not going to, I won't say his name, but I'm like, you can Google it, but you're not going to cause any problems tonight, which I was totally joking. And all the girls saw him and they were all like, oh my God, he looks amazing. This and that.
What?
Legitimately, 6 months after our reunion, he was arrested for 5 murders. He's doing life now, but he wasn't the only one. I mean, my town, which was middle-class Jews and, Goodfellas.
And what's your town?
Whatever. I don't want to start. Merrick, Long Island.
Long Island.
Jeez. Right. 5 murders in 6 months. Yeah, I mean,
it's basically where Goodfellas took place. Well, it wasn't 5 murders in 6 months. They were prior, but
right.
There, by the way, there might have been 5 more in those 6 months. I have
Jesus
no idea.
Jesus Christ, man.
But, you know,
since I do have a question for you, why do you think the nostalgia and the podcast are so popular right now? Because you are doing not one. It's been a year since the first one, right? Victory, the podcast.
Yeah.
And now you're starting Hollywood Ways. I didn't want to go away without talking about that. And
thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah. So,
you know what? I think, you know, during this pandemic, we had so much time. And I think, you know, it was like a time to like see your old friends. And that sounds weird, but the amount of old shows that I revisited. And then for me, you know, hopefully people are interested in us. But for me, like, I love listening to the process. It helps me even to listen to Josh talk, because it always was such a tormenting process for me. So when I hear other creators and other actors talk about their journeys, I like it. But I do like reflecting on the shows as well, and how the times have changed and where these people are now. So I've always been a nostalgic kind of guy. Obviously, Entourage had a lot of self-referential stuff, the things that I loved, movies that I loved in the past, shows I loved in the past. So I don't know. I really just enjoy it, you know, but I also like the going forward part of it also, hearing what you guys are doing and all of that thing. So
no, I get it. I've been highly, highly entertained by Victory. I was listening on my long bike ride yesterday. I listened to Charlie Sheen. I listened to your 1 year anniversary. And I do. I mean, for myself, I love the inside stories about what we do for a living. And I love reconnecting with people and having these conversations. I did without this podcast, I wouldn't get to sit here and talk to you. But I am interested because you have a huge presence on Instagram, and and you have so many different pages and you spend a lot of,
I'm losing my mind. I mean, I don't like to leave my house. So this pandemic, though tragic and awful, has been really good for me. So I can kind of, again, you know, you guys know as actors, you're waiting for someone to give you a script. As a creator, you're spending, which I have a script that may or may not go in London now. You work your ass off for 2 months, 6 months, a year. And then there's so many people that need to come together to make it all work. So much money that somebody needs to trust you with. So the idea now of creating stuff on my own, whether it can make that kind of money is a different issue. But I love it. I love making stupid little videos and putting them out and telling people what I think. And as you can probably tell, I like to talk. So it's been a good thing. And it also, you know, it gives us a chance, people like Josh and I, to talk about how much passion and time went into it. Even if you don't like the shows that we're talking about, you know, they really are. It's like your whole life becomes overtaken if you really get into it. And, you know, when you find these actors, and for me, who has friendships for 20 years now with a lot of my cast members, you know, it's kind of like high school. It's the same thing. It's like going back to these people that, you know, when you don't see them for a year, you get together and it's like nothing's changed. So it's a lot of fun for me. So,
well, that's awesome.
And the new one, Hollywood Ways, can you tell us? I mean, it's just going to be more of, are you still going to do Victory, the podcast, or is it only going to be Hollywood Ways?
Yeah, probably. But I don't know. We'll see. But Hollywood Ways, which I'm going to hopefully have my co-host any day now. I mean, it's crazy. Like, we have to talk deals and shit like that. It's like a podcast. But Scott Kahn may do it with me, who was on Entourage and Hawaii Five-0. Mm-hmm. My friend Brian Hooks, who I did a movie with 20 years ago and found him. But it's, you know, it'll be a little more detailed behind the scenes. I want to break down favorite movies of mine and TV shows, but also talk about all these journeys and things like that. So hopefully you guys will come on and do that. But, mm-hmm. You know, it's going to be everything from what food I like. And again, that sounds kind of fucking boring, but it's going to be fun and interesting. I'll bring some cool guests on and, you know, and we'll talk about everything from the day I got here as that kind of Ryan outsider to this town. I didn't know a single person when I arrived besides my now ex-wife, but she was the only person I knew. I met her on a telephone call and she picked me up at the airport when I got to LA. So other than that, I didn't know a single person out here. And to try to find your way into this business, as you guys know, it's challenging and difficult. And we all go through the ups and downs that we're, I don't know about you guys, but that I still go through pretty much every day. So.
Yeah, for sure. We wanted to ask you some quiz questions, Doug, if you were up for it.
I'm up for whatever you got.
Oh, that's a good answer.
I don't know that I'm going to be able to answer it, but we'll see.
Well, whatever. The willingness is what we're looking for. All right. Let's see here. I'm going to start with this one. Which celebrity has not had an appearance on the OC? Jeffrey Dean Morgan, Bella Thorne, or Johnny Knoxville? No Googling.
Bella Thorne was on Entourage. I don't think Bella Thorne was on the OC.
You are wrong.
Johnny Knoxville.
Johnny, yeah.
So that counts. You said it.
We
had, got it right.
We did have Steve-O on, and Bella Thorne played Autumn Reeser as a little girl.
Oh, wow.
Really?
See, okay. I've studied and rewatched season one, so I don't, I have to, the next time I come back, I'll be better.
That's fair. That's fair.
That's fair. Okay, well, since you know season one so well, Mindy, why don't you ask him
uh-oh.
That? Bottom okay. question.
Then what recipe did Sandy and Jimmy agree that they need to have on the menu at the lighthouse?
Oh, come on now. Meatloaf. Okay.
Do you have a, did your mom have a meatloaf?
My mom did have a meatloaf. Yeah. I'm a big meatloaf guy. I like the meatloaf at Craig's actually in LA, but yeah, my mom had a meatloaf.
I hated Whose my mom mom's didn't? Meatloaf.
You hated it?
I hated it.
I'm not sure I liked my mom's meatloaf either, but she had a meatloaf.
You know, I feel like meatloaf is a controversial entree.
Yeah. By the way, it's not like a big restaurant staple item, but Craig's does have a really good one. But I would not put my mother's meatloaf on a menu.
Right.
Noted. All right, last quick question. Who does Luke cheat on Marissa with in TJ?
Oh, man. I have to remember her name. I mean, I remember the girl. Shit.
Describe it. It'll count if you know kind of the basic.
Well, she's the blonde. I think she might have had ponytails, but no. Was that the same one that he walked outside with when she was like,
that's another.
You know,
like, no, that's a different girl
No.
In TJ, he gets caught with one of Marissa and Summer's friends, whose name is...
Now I'm embarrassed, but I did drink some tequila when I watched that episode, so I'm a little, maybe a little hazy.
Tijuana, you have to. Yes, Holly
Holly.
Holly. Yeah,
you know what? I am embarrassed, but there are things I forget about Entourage when like I'm asked about it on the podcast. I'm like, I don't even remember. So,
well, you remembered the pigtail girl that Luke does go off with, so that counts. That's
at the beach.
At the beach. Yeah. Yep. Well, I think we actually, if you're willing to stay for a voicemail, Doug, I believe we have a voicemail call-in that you would love.
Listen,
for you
I
to
have
listen. And
I
talk.
I have a script to write, and as I said earlier today on my Instagram, any distractions to not have to do that are great. I'll sit on with you all day.
I thought you were going to be like, I got to go. I'm writing a script, so I can't listen to your voicemail.
No, the last thing I want to do is open that script back up.
Well, if you follow him on Instagram, he does tutorials every day. I've written 14 pages, and I've written three today, and it's very entertaining.
That was a lie, by the way. That was a lie. I was trying to convince myself I would visualize it, and it would happen, so...
Okay.
All right. Well, let's listen to it if we can. The powers that be of voicemail.
Hey there. This is Gordon from Germany speaking. I'm a huge fan of Entourage and the OC, and I would like to know from Doug, which couple he liked more, Sandy and Kirsten or Ari and Mrs. Ari? Victory.
Well, thank you. And I love that. I didn't even know we were known in Germany at all. So that's very cool. Look, obviously, you know, Ari and his wife, I mean, that was, it was based on myself and my ex-wife. She played Melissa, who didn't have a name until the end. My son played their son on the show. So it has a lot of personal connections to me, and I used a lot of stories from my own life. But I love, you know, like I said, I love Sandy and Kirsten. I wanted to see Sandy and Julie. I thought that would be an interesting match. But I, you know, their parenting styles, as insane as this sound, there are things that I do go, okay, like, be understanding, more like Sandy, because Kirsten was a little, you know, sometimes she wasn't really on board the whole thing. But, you know, Sandy really did have that understanding of people and compassion and empathy that Ari definitely didn't have. And I think is important that all of us put a little bit of that in us to the best of our abilities. So hopefully that answers the question.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Doug, for first staying on for the voicemail and not leaving us hanging.
You got it. And thank you, guys. Yeah, this was fun. I'm going to need you on mine. And so hopefully you can do that. But, you know, be good. Keep doing your thing. It's very cool.
We have a few more voicemails for us, Mindy.
Bring it.
Shall we hear them?
Yes.
Hi, my name is Jenny. I'm an actress as well. I was wondering if there were any runner-ups that you know of for the role of Julie or Summer, if there were actresses that we would know that were also either offered the role or they were an option for the role. And if so, this question's really long. If so, are there any films of theirs or TV shows that you think that only they could do? Because we know there are, nobody else could have played Summer or Julie.
Well, mine is a shorter answer. I think Summer was such a minor role that it wasn't like people up for it or anything like that, because she was a supporting, you know, guest star, whatever. So I'm going to say I don't think so, because it wasn't a big enough role. Now, Mindy, you probably had a different experience.
Well, I had to reach out to Patrick Resch, our lovely casting director. And he, because you guys have all heard that I was a very last minute, I was able to accept the role very last minute, which I'm very grateful for. But he said that the other actress that would have gotten it is Susan Walters. And actually, I met her on Vampire Diaries, I believe. I think we worked on Vampire Diaries together. And she's a lovely lady. And if you look her up, guys, if you Google her, you will see that she's had quite a career.
Hey, this is Taylor from everythingtheoc.com. I had a question for you guys. Since this episode revolves around a crazy stalker like Oliver, did you guys ever have any sort of stalker situations while filming the OC or in other areas of your career? Thanks. Bye.
Well, I'm not going to speak to some stuff, because then it gives attention to some of the people or things that have happened. And that, anyway, I will say, does it count that I was robbed 5 times by the Bling Ring?
Right.
That kind of counts as stalking, and knowing where I had lived at the time and broke into my house 5 separate times and stole everything that was designer related, such as purses, shoes, and whatnot, and no one can fit in my shoes. So it was still very, very odd to me. The weirdest thing was they gave an interview to Vanity Fair, and it wasn't so much that they stole all the things, but it was that they took a shit in my bathroom, and that was the most disturbing. That's my story.
You're so cool. I don't, when you think about that, just invasive thing, how you get over something like that, it's got a therapy.
I think I wanted to like move right away. I don't know.
Right. And you did, right?
I probably did.
I actually, not so much. I won't comment on something like a stalker, except that I do remember having maybe one or two kind of obsessive people in high school that were had questionable behavior, you know, where
like an Oliver,
like an calling and maybe driving their car fast around my house late at night. And you know,
I bet you had a lot of Olivers, Mindy. You were one hot lady.
Oh well. Still or I are. Remember getting a really odd voicemail in high in as when I was a senior in high school, and it was really menacing from somebody, and I think I know who it was, and it was a little scary. Yeah. Anyway, but on that positive note, yeah. This was so much fun to talk to Doug, and it's I knew that he would be such a fun guest because he's got so much insight at being a showrunner and creator of a very successful show, and it was such a pleasure to talk to him. And
yeah, I loved him. I had never met him. He was so cool and had a lot of fun things to say, and he knew the episode and like the show so well.
Right.
It was pretty awesome.
I want to say to the listeners who are hoping that we get Taylor Handley on, he has been offered, and good for him. He is busy working on a film, and when he's available, we'll have him on. Maybe have a special Oliver episode because it's a lot of discussion.
The Oliver twist, we'll call it. Thank you guys for putting up with us all these weeks and listening to our shenanigans and whatnot. Follow, rate, and review Welcome to the OC Bitches wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you like to watch us and look at our faces, check it out on YouTube.
Bye.
Bye.
When Shopify says you can sell anywhere, they mean it. Ooh, hold up. Just got a new sale. Whoa. Shopify doesn't mind if you're at sea level. Or on top of the world!
Whether you're selling carabiners or crop tops, start selling with Shopify today and join the platform simplifying commerce for millions of businesses worldwide. This is Possibility, powered by Shopify. Sign up for a free trial at shopify.com/podcast22. Shopify.com/podcast22.
Hi, everyone. It's Rabia Chaudhry.
And I'm Ellen Marsh.
And we have a new podcast called Rabia and Ellen Solve the Case. As you know, I am a very smart lawyer.
You are. You're so well-respected in the entire world. You know everything.
Thank you so much.
And as you know, I am a famous Broadway star. Gorgeous. I sing like a nightingale.
Well, yes. At least that's what your mom says. Just kidding. This is Ellen Marsh. And
that's I'm Rabia.
But we are teaming up to bring you a show like you have never heard before.
True crime meets talk show. Nobody's done it. We're going to do it. We're going to do the impossible. And it's the two things that I love. Ellen, I think you'll like it too.
What? True crime and talking?
Yeah.
I'm there. Every other week, we will have a guest talking about whatever true crime case they are obsessed with. We have a list, everything from the Lacey Peterson murder.
Yeah, some of the most famous cases you've ever heard of, obviously, like JonBenet Ramsey, the West Memphis Three.
Chris Watts, Khalif Browder.
Elisa Lam, Madeleine McCain.
Sandra Bland, the Springfield Three. The list goes on and on. But they are all cases that you know, and we are going to dive in deep with someone else and just talk about them.
No, we're going to solve the case, Ellen.
That's right. We're going to solve the case. So subscribe to Rabia and Ellen Solve the Case wherever you get your podcasts.